Welcome back to the Laughing Place podcast. I say back because hopefully you were with us last week for the first edition of the new Laughing Place podcast. And my name is Doobie, and I'm again joined by Fanboy and Captain John.
Arr.
And we have a new guest today, my lovely and talented wife, Rebecca, who will hopefully be a regular part of the podcast. Rebecca, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Rebecca, and hopefully I'll help balance out the crazy boys who surround the table here and add a female voice to it.
So much testosterone, I know.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty scary. Oh, yeah. I grew up going to Disneyland four times a year, proud child of the 70s Disney era, which means, despite the groans and snickers around the table, means I loved the all-new Mickey Mouse Club featuring a racially diverse cast.
From the 90s?
No, not from the 90s. This is with Angel and Pop and Mindy.
And Lisa Welchel.
Yes, it was.
Blair, Facts of Life. Yeah, I like that one, too.
That's right. So I remember those fondly. And I also remember going to the movies with my family and seeing the classics.
Million Dollar Duck.
And The Rescuers.
And The Horse Wore Spray Flannel.
No, I didn't. I don't remember that one.
Ugly Dachshund?
I think that was before my time.
Snowball Express.
Okay, I can
Apple
remember.
Dumpling
I've seen that one. Yeah, I can remember
Rise
that one
Again?
Too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite double feature, I mean, and this one was actually happened in the 80s, was my family went to the Cinerama Dome, and we saw a classic double feature of Sleeping Beauty and The Black Hole.
Wow.
Yeah. Long day.
Enough said. Now, the reason we're just so giddy here today, even more than usual, is we just got back about an hour ago from the Magic Kingdom where we saw Dream Along with Mickey, which is a castle show there, and we are so excited. Why, Rebecca?
Why?
Because we like you.
No, we really enjoyed it because Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy were singing and dancing, and their eyes were blinking, and their lips were moving. They were smiling, and it was amazing to see them articulating, I guess is the word for it.
Yeah, and we first saw this at Mickey's Magic Show at Disney MGM Studios during
the Playhouse Disney Concert Series, part of Magical Beginnings.
Trademark, yes. When you're looking for the trademark, you always turn to Fanboy. And that was really cool to be able to see that. Unfortunately, they didn't allow videotaping then, but they did at this show. So if you haven't seen this before, check out laughingplace.com. By the time you hear this, we should have some video of it online. And it's really, really amazing to see. You will want to see it. What did you think, Fanboy?
I thought it was fantastic. It was great to see the characters not only dancing and singing, but reacting and acting to each other. Not only were we able to make their mouths move and blink, but they were able to sync it up so that they were interacting as part of the whole show. One of my favorite moments was when Minnie gives some typical Disney, well, here at this magical place, all of our dreams come true, and Donald Duck just sort of mouths along with her, mocking her, which is something you'd never be able to do before today.
And the three of us, Fanboy, Rebecca, and myself, we saw this at the Mickey's Magic Show. But Captain John, this was your first time seeing it. What was your opinion?
Yes. It's just so interesting that they really just jumped from characters to just actual performers because they can now, like, emote. So it's something that you don't really think about at first, but then once you see it, you're like, wow.
I definitely agree. I know one of the things I absolutely don't like in Disney parks are what are commonly called the singing rubberhead shows, because there's just something very wrong with seeing Mickey singing and dancing, and his face is just expressionless. And it's nice to have this. I think this is going to really take off. I think the sense we got from the guest, Rebecca was really sitting amongst other guests. What was the sense you got?
The people around me really enjoyed it. The father afterwards next to me leaned over and said, wow, that was not like anything we've seen before here. And he was there with his daughter, so I wasn't sure if he was kind of giving me a nod to what he had seen in that magic, you know, way, because it's weird to talk about because, you know, obviously Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, they're alive. So you feel weird talking about the fact that, well, their mouths move. But it was really amazing. I noticed myself that I was watching Mickey and Minnie and Donald and Goofy more than I normally do with those shows. Since they don't normally articulate, I typically watch the dancers or the singers more because there's more emoting, to use the Captain John term over there, which is apropos. I found myself actually watching Mickey and Donald in the gang, which is a nice turn for me.
Absolutely. Any other comments?
Well, one thing that was neat about seeing the performance we saw was that there was a lot of cast members in entertainment and otherwise there enjoying the show and enjoying this new level, and it really brought excitement. They were cheering, and it's great to see them passionate about working at Disney and sharing their new product, and that was fantastic to see.
And they made it snow at the end.
I don't know what was going on in the atmosphere today, but they have pyro, or what do they call those? Fireworks, right?
Pyro worked.
Pyro? I don't want to be too technical here. They have fireworks at the end of the show, and at the end it was almost like a very Merry Christmas party, and it was snowing, and of course I was dumb enough to look up, so I've got pyro in my eyes, but yeah, it's all part of the magic of the
world. It's not pyro when it's in your eyes and it's Fallout.
Now, another thing exciting that happened at Magic Kingdom today is Fanboy got to experience an attraction that's not yet open. It's not supposed to open until spring, but he got to see a preview today. So tell us all about it, Fanboy. We are like on the edge of our seats.
I got to see what they called a rehearsal of Monsters, Inc.'s Laugh Floor Comedy Club. And what happened was we went to go see Stitch's Great Escape for some unknown reason. And we walked out of the exit and we saw that they were loading guests in. So we ran over and got a great spot. And one thing I got to say about that attraction is the pre-show area and the theater itself are awesome. They really themed it out. You can tell that where it used to say Scare Floor and now it says Laugh Floor, and they have Employees of the Month. It's really neat and a lot to look at. Much improvement from the previous Timekeeper waiting area, and obviously it's not a Circle Vision show anymore. And then you go inside and you sit at seats which sort of have a club feel to them. You have sort of a fake club lights in front of you, and you sit on these long benches. It actually looks like there's a lot of space in there that they didn't use. You probably could have brought in a lot more people, but I'm guessing to keep it sort of intimate at a level, they kept it that way. Someone from WDI came out and asked, told us that we're going to give our opinion at the end of the show, and they're just trying to get some idea of what we thought was funny. They asked guests to contribute their own jokes for a final segment, and so we went in. We knew it was a rehearsal. We know it's not a finished project, so I don't feel it's fair to give a review of it at this time. But it looks like I can see why it was delayed a little bit. It's lacking some laughing. And, I feel it's sorry for all those people in Monstropolis who weren't getting enough energy and from our laughs. But it could use some tweaking. But the nice thing about it, though, is that they have the ability to probably make it really good. I mean, you look at Turtle Talk, which is a much simpler show, but what makes it work is not that Crush talks. It's the way the show is, the pacing, the bits that he does. So I think it might do really well, so I can't judge the quality on it, but it definitely has a long way of going. We saw three different comedians, including, and then additional Mike Wazowski bit. Roz is featured in the show, which seems to be pre-recorded of some sort. They interact with the audience, which is very well received. But unfortunately, the jokes that the comedians tell were not well received. At the end, they go through and they tell the jokes that were given by the guests. And the problem with that is they weren't really funny. So the guests that got their jokes seemed to have a great time. But the rest of us just, we get it 7, 8, 9. And
that's a good one.
Thank you. I remember when I first heard that in first grade, it was like a whole era of comedy was open up to me.
I remember when I first got that last week, and I had the same feeling.
Anyway, but it has potential. What's interesting is at the end, when a show producer from WDI asked us to raise our hands if we thought it was great, good, fair, poor. I'd say most of them were in good to fair. No greats, no poors. So it's not going to be a home run, I don't think, but it'll be. But you don't really know yet.
I know that with last week's podcast, you predicted Doobie.
My bold prediction for 2007 was that Laugh Floor would not actually open. It would be one of those attractions, kind of like Edison Square at Disneyland back in the 60s. We all remember that.
And or Test Track.
It's open.
Seriously? Every time I go by it, the cars aren't running.
Speaking of Test Track, that kind of potentially segues nicely into our next topic, which is the Disney annual report, which came out this week, and more specifically, I mean, there's all those numbers and stuff that, you know, people like Fanboy care about, but us real fans care about the dreaming section, and that's actually what it's called, quote, dreaming section, which had this cool concept art, no mention of where it's going or what it is, just check out all this cool concept art, and now you internet geeks, go have fun with it. And that's what they're doing on the boards, and that's what we're going to do here today. And the biggest piece of concept art right at the top was something called Carland. And if you look at the picture of it, and of course it's linked on laughingplace.com, if you look at the picture of it, it looks exactly like Test Track, the outdoor section, but with cars theming. Fanboy, do you think that's what we're looking at?
I think that is, except once again, the cars are running.
But the one thing is that it appears that it's a racing type of deal.
Oh, I did not even notice that. There are two cars on the track.
There are two of them.
Because we need to make that attraction more complicated.
Any idea where this might be going? I know I've heard some rumors that this might
be for... This looks like Speedway to me. This doesn't look like Test Track.
But it's a bank track.
Okay, the banking. I'll give you the banking.
Yeah, you put Speedway on a bank track and the cars fall down.
Not to mention in the small art, it pretty much looks exactly like the Test Track vehicles are being shown.
Six passengers, is it?
Except like the captain said, they're side by side, which is just a cool concept. We play the Cars video game a lot, and this actually looks like one of the courses that you would see on our little PS2 here. I've read rumors from the famous Jim Hill of JimHillMedia.com that this might be from before Disney's California Adventure. Has anyone else heard anything?
I would find that really interesting that we decided to theme part of DCA to cars and parking and stuff like that, going back to its original heritage.
That may be the definition of irony.
That's
quite humorous, Fanboy. What are some of the other things we see here?
Well, the one that I find interesting is... on sort of the lower part of the page is this new nighttime water spectacular.
Right.
Now, we've all heard of rumors going to DCA and Animal Kingdom and who knows at the international parks that us biased Americans don't consider much. You've got Steamboat Willie in it and the jellyfish from, I presume, Finding Nemo, because we need another version of those. And it's amazing. It looks amazing, and... Part of me also wonders, is this maybe Fantasmic 2?
Wow, I haven't heard those rumors in like 5 years.
That's an interesting idea.
Cool.
These bubbles, this reminds me of that thing we saw that one night. We were at the Grand Californian Hotel, and we were out. We were walking out from a late dinner at probably, I think it was Storyteller, and we could hear music coming from the lagoon area of DCA. So we went up one of the exterior fire escapes and so you could look into DCA, and in the middle of the lagoon was this giant orb, and it was illuminated. It seemed to be from the inside, and they were showing like clips. I think it was Bambi that we saw. Like, they were showing clips of it, and it was on this giant orb in the water. And that's what this image reminds me of. It reminds me of that.
I totally remember that, and in fact, I think Universal Studios has something a lot like that.
Yeah, Cinesphere 360, a salute to all movies... That should never be included in a fireworks show.
But like mostly Schindler's Jurassic List. Park.
Do, 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 do.
Okay. So, anything else interesting here? I think the other things, at least according to Jim Hill, are earmarked for international parks, except for Toy Story, which it looks like concept art for what we've been calling Midway Mania and what now is being called, I guess, Toy Story Mania?
Well, I think it's still called Midway Mania, but that concept art features Toy Story. But then there's also the Monsters, Inc. attraction that's listed here that's also similar to Midway Mania, and that's going to the Tokyo Disneyland Park. The one that I find interesting is this concept for new Disney theme park. You know, every time we build another destination, we always start off with a Magic Kingdom, and this doesn't look like a Magic Kingdom. But at the same time, I don't know of any international expansion of another theme park. So I wonder what that might be. I honestly have no clue.
I know the rumor for that, at least according to Jim Hill of JimHillMedia.com, was this would be for China. And, of course, there's been a Shanghai rumored park for, well, basically ever since Hong Kong Disneyland was announced. They've been rumored to be doing one for Shanghai. So, again, it's a rumor. Take it for what you want. Rumors are fun.
And, of course, I have to mention the pirate-themed adventure. I mean, or else, you know.
We know where that's going, don't we?
That looks like the old Captain Hook, Ship, and Pirate Skull from Fantasyland at Disneyland of my youth.
Tuna.
Yeah, the best tuna sandwiches in the world.
Tuna melts and grape juice. Bring back the old Fantasyland.
Oh, man. I could go for some of that.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. A lot to look forward to around the world. We've talked about Walt Disney World a little bit and what's going on now. Let's go to the other coast, where the most exciting news at the Disneyland Resort this week was an announcement that came down just today, at least today as we're recording this, and that is the return of the Disney Cruise Lines to the West Coast. The Disney Magic is going to be sailing through the Panama Canal over to the West Coast, and it'll be doing 12 seven-night sailings to the Mexican Riviera between May and August, and then 2 weeks coming back. I don't think any of us took the West Coast cruise, when was it, last year, did we, unfortunately?
No.
But we all have cruised before, and we haven't talked cruising yet on our podcast. So the three of us, Captain John, Rebecca, and myself, took our first cruise back in October. And what are your memories of that, Captain?
Oh, I'm going to bring up something that's sort of off topic, sort of, but I just instantly thought of it. I hope there's video footage of when they do sail it to the Panama Canal. For some reason, that just sounds very amusing to me.
I've been on YouTube, and there are lots of personal videos of the ship going through the Panama Canal. It's quite cool.
And there are several webcams of the Panama Canal area. So if you are addicted to the internet, you can find these webcams and periodically check them during that week. And you can find out. I think they actually will post, in some cases, what time you can expect to see which cruise ships going through them.
But back to the cruise itself. What was your impression? This was your first cruise ever, obviously your first Disney cruise. It was a 7-day cruise through the Western Caribbean. And, of course, the pirates are huge on the Disney Cruise Line.
Oh, yes.
And you are Captain John. What was your overall impression of your first Disney cruise?
Well, throughout the whole cruise, I was basically just waiting for the pirate night. So, I mean, it's just really cool to be on a you may not necessarily think about it at first, but just the motion is just very fascinating, because some days it'll be sort of rocky, but yet some days you'll be, and you sort of, get rocked to sleep sometimes, it's very relaxing.
Like Mission Space.
How about you, Rebecca? I know we had a great time on the cruise. Any particular memories you have?
When I think about our cruise, the first thing that comes to mind always is hospitality. The amazing amount of hospitality we encountered everywhere, whether it was our steward running to the door to open it as he saw us approaching, or the multitude of people who came to your aid when we were at Castaway Key and we were looking for a chair, and four different cast members showed up with varying options for chairs.
Share that story.
No, but it was so kind. And I mean, when we would bump into cast members who knew that we were there with Captain John, who, by the way, looked like a spitting image of Captain Jack for Pirate Night. So therefore, whenever we would bump into cast members, they would ask us where the captain was.
Yeah, I was called Captain Jack for the rest of the trip after that night.
You just felt like you were home, and they were so kind, and lots of tears were shed by, a lot of the guests as we were leaving. It was almost like a super hyped, as far as timetable, of summer camp. You're like thrown into this situation with a bunch of people you don't know and probably will never see again. And there was just this instant camaraderie, and you were kind of sad that you were going away. Yep. So it was almost like super speed summer camp.
Most definitely.
Better food, though.
Oh, dude, the food was amazing.
Food was amazing. And speaking of pirates, as we just were with the Disney Cruise Line, now it's time for our, so far weekly, but I doubt we'll do it every week. But there was some big news in the world of Disney's biggest franchise in the world after High School Musical, and that would be Pirates of the Caribbean.
Arr.
Captain, fill us in. What was the big news on Pirates this week?
Well, first off, we got some promotional material, I'm not even entirely sure if it's final product, but we've got some concept of, promotional material, like the movie posters, etc. It's basically the characters featuring, Jack Sparrow, Will Turner, everybody, and Captain Sal Fang, who's a new character, played by Chow Yun-Fat. Keep that in mind.
I will keep that in mind.
And it's basically a very foggy-looking ad campaign. It's very mysterious-looking.
I saw it. It was pretty cool.
And also rumors are going around that the teaser trailer for Pirates 3 will be debuting during the Super Bowl, giving me the only reason I watch the Super Bowl anyway is for the commercials. So, I mean, that's good news for me.
What I think might be interesting is, this is completely conjecture on my part, is, you know, Steve Jobs was known for that 1984 Mac commercial that premiered during the Super Bowl, only aired during the Super Bowl, and everybody knows is the birth of the modern day Super Bowl commercial. I wonder if he has any influence on the sort of destination marketing of having the Pirates of the Caribbean trailer premiered during the Super Bowl. And, you know, I have no idea how much influence Steve is running over the company, but it's an interesting thought.
Just off the top of your head, can you guys think of any other Disney promotion that... I know that they did a lot of halftime shows, but, like, just as far as, like, ads that...
I think after they win the Super Bowl,
that one.
We know that.
Well, that one, right.
What are you going to do
Disney
next?
World?
Arr, I'm going to Disneyland. Maybe that's what they're going to do. Yeah. Captain Jack on the field after the game. No, probably not. But if they
If they do, I'm definitely gonna like record that.
Whoever the MVP is, I expect to hear a lot of about how winning the Super Bowl was their dream and it came true.
999,999 to go. Also this week, Disney announced where the 2007 shareholders meeting was going to be held. Fanboy, why don't you clue us in?
And to quote Bob Iger, in order to help the city recover from the devastating effects of Hurricane Katrina, the 2007 annual shareholder meeting will be held in New Orleans, Louisiana. Not to be confused with New Orleans Square, where that lady ran to be mayor of.
What lady?
Remember, there was that lady on her website. She posted a picture of her. She was running to be mayor of New Orleans. She posted
the actual New Orleans.
That's right.
She posted a picture of herself in front of New Orleans Square, caused a big controversy. Disney threatened to sue. And I don't think she won.
I think that's a safe bet. Now, there's actually been a bit of controversy surrounding the choice of New Orleans. Now, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. I mean, New Orleans is like, it's become America's city, you know, pretty much over the course of a few days. It's become America City. Everyone loves it. The New Orleans Saints are in the semifinals in football, and everyone's so excited. But nevertheless, there has been a bit of controversy regarding this. Last year, Bob Iger chose to hold the meeting in Anaheim, and a lot of people assumed that this year it would be out here in Orlando. And instead, they're doing it in New Orleans, and there's been some internet speculation that there may be ulterior motives regarding that. Has anyone heard anything?
Well, I read somewhere on the internet that they were not going to hold it in Orlando so that they could avoid dealing with the cast members who are upset with their labor situation and the outsourcing that's been going on, most notably in valet and baggage handling. I don't give much weight to that because last year in Anaheim, Disneyland eminently had a strike planned, and there were lots of press surrounding that. And it didn't seem like it was a big deal. It didn't get a lot of media coverage. And I know that Walt Disney World is a little bit of a different situation, and I could totally see them not holding it here just because of the amount of cast members that have stock and just holding the 57,000 cast members they have here. But I don't – it's not like Bob to run away from that based on last year.
Now, the controversy that was being referred to in this rumor, and this was from JimHillMedia.com. You can read it for yourself, was the fact that Disney World has recently outsourced some – valet and baggage handling jobs, 167 to be exact, to a local company.
Give or take a few.
To a local company. And so when you arrive at Disney now, at Disney World, and you valet your car, believe it or not, the first person you come in contact with is not a Disney cast member. It's an outside company, which is strange. I think it's a little bit weird. We have had the chance to experience it once so far with the valet. I don't think that's a fair thing. It's the first week they've had it. You know, cut them some slack. I'm not going to critique them on that.
Well, but to give them credit, while the valet situation that we dealt with wasn't a smooth one, they were very friendly in dealing with, and they were I don't know how to – other than that. I mean, they were very friendly. The people that we encountered throughout our situation with them worked out well.
Yeah, it did. They went the Disney extra mile to make right what occurred. They did solve the problem. They were very friendly along the way. They kept in communication.
Simple thing was the keys.
They lost my keys.
Yeah, but they didn't lose them. They were misfiled or something, so they had to search much harder for the keys than they should have, which left us waiting for longer than is typical with a valet.
Right, and again, first week, and plus it could happen at any time, so I'm not here to critique them on that specifically. However, in my opinion, the first person you meet when you drive to, you know, you land on the plane, you've spent your $5,000 for your dream vacation, you rent your car, you drive to the Grand Floridian, you pull up, I think that should be a Disney cast member greeting you at the door. But hey, maybe it'll work out great. Any other opinions?
The one greeting at your door, the certified old man that they always have at these resorts, is actually still a Disney cast member. But the one that gets you to the door is not a Disney cast member.
The one that opens your door to get you out of your car is not a Disney cast member. However, the spry young man at the guard station is still security. That's still a...
Yes, we haven't outsourced that yet.
You won't be outsourcing security anytime soon.
Regarding the valet outsourcing, I have a question regarding that. The Magical Express program, because if you're not renting a car, your first greeting is going to be your Magical Express experience. Are those all Disney cast members, or has a portion of that been outsourced?
The greeters are Disney cast members, the ones with the Mickey hands waving you in and checking in. The bus transporters and the people handing your bags are not. The buses are run by Mears, and the baggage handling is run by Bags, who is also the folks that they outsource the valet and baggage handling to.
Because I have to imagine that when you're talking about the image of Walt Disney World to your guest, a greater number of people's first image of Disney World is going to be those Magical Express experiences just by volume, as opposed to the valet. However, your valet are going to be your higher end customers, I guess. And is that who these outsourcing, is this outsourcing resort wide, like all of the parks and hotels, or is this select hotels?
It's all of the deluxe, which are the only ones that offer valet service.
Okay.
So it includes the Contemporary, the Polynesian, Grand Floridian, Yacht Beach, Boardwalk, and Animal Kingdom Lodge.
And I haven't done Magical Express, but I'm guessing when you do Magical Express, you meet a Disney cast member at the airport who then, you know, directs you to the bus. Once you get off the bus, you then, for one reason or another, often have to talk to a valet or a baggage handler or something, which at one time was Disney and now is not Disney.
True.
So we'll see. I mean, True. This is the internet era. If this is causing a problem, we'll hear about it very quickly. I think it's been going on about 2 weeks now. I've gotten one email from someone who, you know, talked about their experience with wasn't so good. I don't think there's been any talk on the discussion board. So if it's an issue, we'll find out soon. And if it works well, hey, more power to Disney.
Next, we're going to talk about Disney and Broadway. During my search of the daily news headlines yesterday, I came across the item that Beauty and the Beast is going to be closing on July 29th. It opened in 1994, and it's offered over 5,000 shows. And it's going to be closing to make room for The Little Mermaid, which is going to open on December 6th.
The Little Mermaid on stage sounds sort of befuddling to me.
Fanboy, do you have any insight as to exactly what this show is?
It's a Broadway musical. It's being directed by Francesca Zambello, who did Aladdin, a musical spectacular, currently being performed at DCA. And it's actually the second sort of attempt to do this musical. The first one didn't work out for creative reasons, is my understanding. And it's just like, well, we did Lion King, we did Beauty and the Beast, we did Tarzan, Mary Poppins, just another one in that vein.
It seems like it would be very complicated to stage, though.
It will be, and I think that's part of the challenge. I mean, they said the same things about The Lion King when that opened, and that's what made it successful. Beauty and the Beast, the first one, was very safe, and I don't think it was, I mean, while we like it as Disney fans, and your average person might like it, from a sort of Broadway artistic perspective, it wasn't very well received just because it was a 2-hour long theme park show in terms of artistic direction. So that's what makes it good. I just like the Nemo show, that would have been a challenge as well, and they did great things with it.
I'm expecting that it will feature a lot of aerial work. I think I finally got that out. I don't mean aerial, the
mermaid.
Okay, yeah. But no, I figure to deal with like the mermaid and the fluid motion of water.
And I think it's a safe bet, too, that there'll be Michael Curry puppets.
Oh, good point.
Sir from Alien Encounter.
No, that's Tim Curry. Okay,
okay. I get him confused.
Every week.
We've had two shows.
It's officially a running gag.
As Rebecca said, it opens on December 6th. Previews are supposed to begin on November 9th. And, of course, it's long. There will have to be some new songs, and they're being done by Alan Menken, who composed the original Little Mermaid, and the lyrics are done by Glenn Slater. And this team has worked together before on Home on the Range and on Sister Act the Musical, which is a non-Disney production of a Disney film.
Directed by the former head of at Feature Animation. So it's this week's version of We Are Marshall.
Moving on to the Disney Channel. There was a big week for the Disney Channel as the new original movie Jump In premiered. 8.17 million viewers tuned in to watch Corbin Bleu in his second big Disney Channel movie. He also starred in High School Musical. No, I'm joking around. I actually watched Jump In. It was actually quite entertaining. The jump roping stuff is really cool. I'm probably not the target demographic for it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, even more than High School Musical. Anybody else?
It's probably my favorite Disney Channel original movie. I mean, I haven't even seen High School Musical all the way through, so the fact that it actually was able to keep me into it the whole time is saying something right there.
You liked it more than Quince.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it as well. I thought that the story was really good, and the way the characters, I think that it would appeal to girls because it has kind of that romance and that boy who needs to be fixed kind of thing. The broken boy
who needs to sit in front of the dog.
our little dog Happy is running around, and I didn't mean it like that. I just mean that girls like a story where there's a boy who you know, there's something wrong with him. In this case, it was a boy who didn't realize that you can do anything you want to do. Don't be trapped by the stereotypes of your gender. And so he gave Double Dutch a try, and he was terrific at it.
He was terrific at it. It's hard to...
It looks impossible.
I don't forget also, after Jump In, we had the premiere of Cory in the House, the new Disney Channel original series based on That's So Raven.
Now, in comparison to Jump In... I only was able to watch like 10 seconds of Cory in the House.
I do want to add, though, that while none of us made it through the entire episode of Cory in the House, it was the second highest cable show that week. So it did pretty well.
Second to
Jump In.
There we go.
It snagged 3 of the top 10 spots for cable viewing that week, as I understand it. What they do with the Disney Channel so brilliantly is they feature the show on Friday evening, and then usually on Saturday night and again on Sunday, they air it again, but they repackage it. So on Sunday night, it featured emails and questions from the viewers, and it was hosted by the stars of the show. They've done this with High School Musical. In fact, on January 20th, Saturday evening, they're going to feature High School Musical yet again, this time repackaged, featuring footage from High School Musical around the globe.
I feel like we should have a ding there. Rebecca got the date and everything.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. But, you know, that's not the only way that High School Musical is continuing its life as one of Disney's success stories.
Which turned 1 year old, right?
On January 20.
Yay.
Continue, fanboy.
Variety reported that Feld Entertainment, the folks that brought us Blinkin' and Talkin' characters, is considering doing High School Musical on ice. Mm-hmm. And, you know...
That's cool.
I see it.
It's so cool because it's on ice.
I don't get
it.
Shocking. So, they had a great success with that concert series, selling out arenas around the globe, and Disney on Ice does well around the globe. Of course, that's the only reason to go to TD Waterhouse. What was it called now? Amway Arena down here?
It's not the only reason. We saw the circus last week.
It's the only celebration. Yeah, so hopefully Feld will go more on the Disney on Ice side than the Bellabration side of life. But it'll be interesting to see how that comes to life. I actually did see Grease on Ice, produced by Feld Entertainment, back in the day. In fact, when I was in high school, my school really wanted to do Grease, but they couldn't get the rights because Grease on Ice was going to be in Oakland, where I grew up, at the same time. So we couldn't do a high school version of Grease because Grease on Ice was going to be there. And you know what? It was actually ended up seeing the show because I'm a Feld junkie. And it was actually really good, so I have high hopes.
Wait, you're serious?
Yes.
I am serious.
Don't call you Shirley. Shirley, you're not serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah.
As in the Jungle Cruise, Shirley?
Given that High School Musical is coming to ice, what way has Disney not featured this wonderful, this exciting movie?
Because what have we had? We've had the show.
Yes,
we've had pop-up High School Musical.
Yes.
We've had Think Karaoke High School Musical.
And Dance Along.
Dance Along.
Dance Along.
They've had two separate DVD releases of it, just straight, and then the remix edition.
There's a pep rally in both California and Florida. Paris, for all I know, but I doubt it. Any other ideas, any opportunities they've missed for how to capitalize on this underused franchise?
Serial. Mobile High School Musical?
Mobile?
Yeah,
mobile.
Cell phone works so well with ESPN.
Do they feature it? I know that Fanboy over there has Disney Mobile. Does it have like a High School Musical setting on
Absolutely. When I went to the High School Musical concert at Amway Arena, again, I downloaded the High School Musical theme pack, and I got to have Troy and Gabriella on my phone. And when people would call me, all the 12-year-old girls next to me would go, it's Breaking Free, my favorite song. So, yeah, that you can get High School Music as well. I should.
And Captain John, what are you missing in your High School Musical life?
They need to do High School Musical serial.
How would you do High School Musical serial?
They've done everything else. I mean, you have pirate serial. I mean,
it could be like Puffed on Wildcat Heads. The team is
with
Wildcats.
Like basketball marshmallows
and basketball marshmallows. Brilliant.
And I can see the commercial now with the cereal talking to the milk, going as they're pouring. We're all in this together.
Oh, there you go.
Very good.
See, I think they missed the boat by not doing a Dance Dance Revolution featuring High School Musical.
Yeah, I'm big into DDR.
And then you could package it with some of the other currently popular Disney Channel greats like the Hannah Montana series as well, so you could feature some of that music.
They did do a Disney version of Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. really fun too. I think that's a great idea. I also think a puppet version, a la Super Pup, would be a really nice idea.
I think so too, because there's nothing funnier than costume puppets playing basketball.
Who can't see?
Right.
And then I do look forward in 10 years to Video Hits 1, Behind the Music, High School Musical.
Oh, see, I was thinking it would be Eon E, True Hollywood Story.
Yeah. One of the two.
That's what I was...
Is there a difference in the two shows other than the channel they're on?
What has, like, this dark... They're going to tell you some deep secret. Behind the Music, is it as dark?
No, I think True Hollywood Story is a little darker.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And Behind the Music, we'll find out that Cordon Bleu actually just lip-syncs them.
Corbin.
Okay. I think Disney's Wide World of Sports needs to do something because they need to do something.
Yeah, they need to do something. Yeah.
I could go to All Star Cafe and get my Wildcat cereal and my Wildcat burger and my.
Thanks for incorporating the cereal on.
Speaking of cereal, General Mills announced that they're doing Disney cereals now. Are we that finicky that we just totally gave up on Kellogg's?
Price point. Kellogg's cereal is too expensive. People who are going to buy cereal for their kids are not going to spend quite as much, I don't think, on it. I think it's really smart to go with General Mills because General Mills is going to offer you cereal at a lower price than Kellogg's.
And my other question then is, if on the cereal, which is very important to me, if this whole healthy initiative, what's the point of having healthy cereal?
Well, General Mills just really scored a hit with their Fruity Cheerios. The Fruity Cheerios, they've reduced the sugar content greatly, but it apparently helped drive their stock back up. Just
really?
The Fruity Cheerios brand.
Mm-hmm. I really don't support non-sugary cereal.
I love Fruity Cheerios.
No,
you're
maybe
wrong.
We should start a cereal podcast now. Apparently they know a lot about this.
I like Fruity Cheerios, so I read up on it.
And that's why you married Doobie.
I heard the reason they went to General Mills was because Haley actually begged them to help.
No.
But that was on a rumor site that I read, so I don't know if it's true. I think we've pretty much made it through the news today, but don't press stop yet, because we're going to introduce a new segment today that we'll come back to every now and then. It's called What We Like. And we're going to go around the oblong table here and talk about this week are two favorite North American parks. There's six to choose from, four at Disney World, two in California. And why don't we start with Rebecca? Why don't you tell us in a little bit reason why your two favorite parks in North America, number one and number two.
My favorite park is Disneyland of my childhood. So not Disneyland now. What Disneyland now is nice, but I have a particular fondness for the era when we had America Sings and Adventure Through Inner Space and America the Beautiful, although that's tied nicely with the time period when we had a lot of entertainment there during the 40 years of adventure celebration. So that's kind of a hard for me, but I have to say that Disneyland is the park that I have a greater fondness for. And second would be Disney's Animal Kingdom, I think, because I really feel like I'm transported to another location there, which is why I'm not as fond of some other parks, and you'll learn about that, I guess, in the next part when we talk about what we don't like. But I really like Disney's Animal Kingdom because I just feel like I've stepped into another place. I forget that I'm in Central Florida. I forget that I'm in a theme park. I just really get so totally sucked into the environment.
Do you feel like you're in a zoo?
No, it's not a zoo.
Captain.
She basically said both of what I was about to say. So, although Animal Kingdom and Epcot have been battling for the top place and on my list for a while, there's just something about that I get from the whole environment. Not necessarily about the rides or anything, just the setting is what I really like in a theme park. So I like Disneyland California just because, you know.
Which one do you put first, Disneyland or Animal
Kingdom? I'd put Disneyland in California.
My favorite is definitely Disneyland, just because you have a combination of the history and heritage, but you also have a very forward-looking part there, especially before DCA opened. That was all they had to work with, so there was always something new there, something exciting. And because it's local-driven, there's always something new and something exciting there. You know, like Rockin' California Screamin' or Rockin' Space Mountain, that other roller coaster.
And
Rockin'.
Let's go play.
Yes, let's go play. And then my second favorite park is, just like the other two, is Animal Kingdom. Just because, Disneyland, we've tried to recreate at Magic Kingdoms around the globe, and even Disney MGM Studios has a lot of Magic Kingdom in it, too. Animal Kingdom, we really try to do something different, and I think that's what Disney's really about, is pressing the envelope.
Okay, Doobie, you better have something different.
I'm going to stand up and represent.
Word.
Word up on that.
Just Epcot. Keeping it real.
Epcot Center 82, which would be my favorite park of the six. Epcot is magical. First of all, it's two theme parks in one.
Two theme parks in one.
And Future World is nice. I certainly love Future World. But really, Epcot's all about the World Showcase and more specifically about the people. Where else can you go? And as you travel around it, you meet people from different countries. I mean, I envision the day when I take my child there to give them a bit of an education about, you know, people around the world. You go to the United Kingdom, you go to France, you go to Morocco, and you can learn about these countries from people who, you know, 6 months ago were living there, and they just got to America. And I know Walt always wanted a bit of education in his entertainment, and just by the fact that these places are staffed by international cast members, makes Epcot something truly unique. I can't think of anything, any other theme park even anywhere near as unique, you know, as special as Animal Kingdom is. You know, 90 minutes down the road, there's Busch Gardens, which is somewhat similar, but Epcot is one of a kind, and it's definitely my favorite of the parks. And then number two would be Animal Kingdom for all the reasons you've heard before. So. Another new segment we're debuting this week is What We Don't Like, which is a little bit similar to what we just did, but different. And we're going to start this week with our least favorite of the North American theme parks. And once again, Rebecca.
My least favorite of the North American theme parks is Disney MGM Studios. And that's because not only I don't really like thrill rides, so the fact that it has Tower of Terror and Rock and Roller Coaster, or Tower of Terror being something that, you know, people really love, I don't really like either one. And overall, the theme park for me just doesn't take me anywhere. I mean, it's pretty, and it looks nice, and it's there. But I don't really feel like I'm taken anywhere.
Aren't you taken to Hollywood? I mean, how often do you get to go to Hollywood?
But I don't feel like... I mean, I did when I was little, I guess. Maybe it's that I'm older. Because I can remember when I came here in 95, I was living in Texas, and I came here, and it was kind of nice because it kind of felt like going home because I'd been living in California before I moved to Texas. but I don't feel that now. Maybe it's because I've decided to move away from LA and away from Hollywood and away from California to Florida, and that's where I live now. So going there, I don't have that same fondness that I did when I was in Texas and I really wanted to be in California. I hated being in Texas. So maybe that comes into play, but I don't know. That park just leaves me kind of flat. I like the food, but I don't really like any of the attractions
there.
Yeah, I like the food. I like Brown Derby, and I like Mama Melrose, and I like Sci-Fi Diner, and I like Primetime, but I can't think of any time I'm sitting at home and going, wow, I really feel like I need to go to the Disney Studios today so I can go experience
the High School Musical pep rally.
Yeah, that could change things.
But
Rock and Lorca.
Yeah, so that's me. Captain John.
Captain John. Strangely enough, although Disneyland in California is my favorite park, Magic Kingdom here is my least favorite park. Mainly because before I was just talking about how I always like the sort of, you know, the environment of the place. And I always feel whenever I'm in Magic Kingdom that it's almost like very, I don't quite get the heart behind it. So it always sort of leaves me cold in that way.
I'm curious, if Disneyland in California did not exist, do you think you'd feel the same way about Magic Kingdom?
I don't know. There's just such an... The environment around it is very, I don't know, just touristy. So, not to mention, there's, you know, I like having things upkept well.
Ooh. We're not going there.
Nap.
FB.
What?
Don't you watch That's So Raven?
Fanboy.
Fanboy.
FB.
That's the lingo the kids are using these days.
I hear it's hip on the new Disney.com.
Word.
Peace
the
out,
new Disney.com, that still hasn't come. We're waiting and
Have
waiting
you checked?
And
it
waiting.
It could be there now.
Oh, true enough. Yeah.
But if not, then you have to wait until it does come out to say FB.
Touché. Fanboy?
My least favorite would have to be Discovery Island. Last time I was there, there just wasn't much going on. I don't know. I mean, it's tied with River Country too. It just the wall. It's not doing something for me. And I know it's getting knocked down by Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach, but still not open. So it sort of I feel my heart's broken. I knew it so well. It was actually my favorite water park was River Country, and my favorite wildlife preserved where Disney got in trouble for hurting animals was Discovery Island. So, do you not know that story? Doobie, give me this look.
Nope.
Disney got in trouble for getting rid of birds that flew it, that were not part of the display, but were just natural birds that happened to fly by because, you know, they were a bad show. So, luckily we learned that lesson and we built Animal Kingdom, and nothing like that would ever happen today, but it was a different era back then. So, yeah, those would be my two least favorite Disney theme parks.
The birds do fly into the enclosures at Animal Kingdom, and they do intersperse with actual...
Seriously?
Yeah, like then the Oasis area in the front they have.
Oh, those, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, some cases...
We should release them after, like, the castle show and see what happens.
Oh, I remember that story. Back in the day, they had to stop releasing the doves or pigeons after the show because the hawks got smart and realized, hey, castle show! Dinner.
Time.
So they had to stop releasing them.
I don't think an ibis release would be very clean.
Ew.
I had to say it.
Isn't that Frontierland? Man, that area is overrun by birds. I understand why now they have on the back of every napkin, do not feed the birds.
Don't feed the birds. Puppets are back. Yeah, that was actually, you know, that was the way Walt originally intended it. The Sherman Brothers would come in every Friday. Walt would just look at all the birds overrunning the Burbank lot, and he'd be like, play it. And they would sing that song. Though I guess it didn't translate to film.
You're so weird.
You have no idea.
So I didn't know that it was okay. I would have had Disney Quest as my answer if I had followed Benji's model. But I actually chose one of the six major parks. And it so saddens me to say that Disney's California Adventure is now my Disney park.
It's hip and edgy.
When I think back to the DCA that opened back in 2001, which by no means was perfect, it sure could have used some more attractions. But what it had Steps in Time.
Oh, you remember Steps in Time.
Steps in Time.
Oh, I remember Three Bags Full.
It had Lafitte featuring Max.
Remember the feat featuring Max? John Doe.
John Doe. It had the juggler and the amphitheater. It had Get a Grip slash...
Lights, Camera, Chaos. The Wandering Wisteria. Divine.
It was a different park. Just like I love Epcot because it's so different, I love DCA because it was so different.
It had that good food place. What was that place called?
The Market. The Market.
The deli?
Yeah, that place. It was had just a called, name.
Yeah.
Closed?
Market Deli.
No, it was...
It had ABC Bistro, which was not great food, but...
Soap Opera Bistro.
Yeah, that one too.
Avalon Cove before Characters?
It was such a different park. Disney really tried something different, and, you know, I wish they had spent more money so they could have had more attractions, but at least in theme, they tried something different. It really resonated with me, and I loved that park, and...
Eureka, that's what it had.
Eureka.
And what they're doing to it now, I understand the guests are probably appreciating it more, but it's definitely becoming more of an ordinary park, a less unique park, and it saddens me, and so that's why it bottoms my list of favorite North American Disney parks now.
But they have Rockin' the Screamin' now.
And it breaks my heart. Think of that Luminaria, that first holiday season. That was a good park.
Before they edited it, that was a good show.
All you Disney people are wrong. That was a good park.
When we used to go to the Margarita, the Cove Bar, just right beside the Avalon Cove, and sit there and have a delicious margarita and lobster nachos, but no lobster because Doobie and I don't eat lobster.
Nor do I drink margaritas.
Okay, so I would have the margarita and you would
have
the nachos. You would enjoy the nachos. And you'd look out over the water and you had the pier. It was like, I don't know, it was kind of like the California that you always thought existed but didn't.
Remember the wave machine that used to work?
They don't do that anymore.
They don't have a wave machine.
They had to stop because of the Luminaria island.
Oh, that's right.
It was an AP paradise.
Speaking of birds.
It was an annual fast water paradise. It really was. It was the ultimate Disney place to hang, and hang we did that first year.
Oh, totally.
We just went pretty much every Sunday and hung out, and it was awesome, and I miss it. I really do. And that's what we don't like. Well, it almost brings me to tears. I really missed it. I didn't know until I talked about it, but I'm glad I have you guys here with me to help me through this moment.
It'll be okay.
Yes.
Stay strong.
We'll dreams. Get this. Your dreams will...
Like Michael... Captain EO...
We are so diverging.
You know what my favorite thing about Michael Jackson at Disneyland is?
What's that?
The fact that that Fantasy Water show at the Disneyland Hotel ran until about 3 years ago.
It did.
Having not changed since 1991.
Woo!
And I'd be walking to my car at the Simba lot, and I'd hear Michael Jackson. I'd be like, that's a little weird that they would play that at Downtown Disney right now. And I'd be like, it's not Downtown Disney. That's Fantasy Waters.
What song? Do you remember?
The one from Captain EO where he would go, woo!
It wasn't Change the World.
That's not all of them.
I was trying to remember when he was bringing
it. Was the last one.
It's just,
the last one.
Yeah.
It had a car song in there.
It was
so retro.
It was. And Jack Wagner, which
and it
is
featured, it featured a little bit of the Baroque hoedown from Main Street, right?
Which
with
was weird because
squares light up.
But it was weird because that show ran so long, it lasted through the closing of Electrical Parade and the bringing back of the Electrical Parade. So at one point I said, wow, that's really dated. It has Electrical Parade in it. And then suddenly it's like, wow, that's really on top of it. It has Electrical Parade into it. And they didn't have to change anything.
Everything old is new again. And speaking of old and new again, next week we have some exciting media events coming up.
Woohoo!
What can we expect, Fanboy, to hear next week?
Well, I like to think of this as a sort of coming out of the Bob Iger theme park era, and they're going to probably announce Midway Mania for both DCA and Disney World at the Disney MGM Studios as sort of the big first Pixar-inspired attraction to actually be greenlit after we acquired Pixar. Also, you might hear something about Disney Vacation Club at Grand Californian, possibly even Contemporary, who knows. It's a secret. Don't tell anybody. I know this is really focused on Year of a Million Dreams, so you probably won't hear about the next marketing campaign or anything like that, but, you know, I can't think that they might not even talk about some of these pictures that we've gotten and maybe even announce some of that. I've just found out that it's going to be held in a ballroom, and the last time we held an event like that in the ballroom was when we announced the Disney Decade.
No
so
way.
Who knows?
And that was awesome. What was the highlight?
One of my favorite attractions that was built because of Disney Decade was Dick Tracy's Crime Stoppers, the Mermaid Lagoon at Disneyland, the Baby Herman ride. Those were all great
things. What show was it? There was a show that featured the Disney Decade.
I'm guessing Disney Decade would have been 1990, so it would have been the 35th anniversary special of Harry Anderson.
Harry Anderson.
Prophetic.
Yeah. It never happened.
Which is weird, though, but if you watch it, I mean, and I know that a good idea never dies at WDI, but some of it kind of came to life in its own way. You know, they talked about the studio land that they're going to be building at Epcot was sort of turned into the Disney MGM Studios, and, you know, we didn't get Little Mermaid, but we got Toontown, and then a lot of those effects that were designed for the Little Mermaid ride appeared in Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh and the Nemo attraction that was just opened. So
it's always interesting when WDI takes some of the concepts that don't occur and turn them into something else, like DCA, which originally was Disney's America, right?
Forever, Disney wanted to build a classic Paradise Pier kind of thing. I mean, the boardwalk is originally going to have a roller coaster through the lobby. That didn't work. So they try and do it at Disney's what do they call it? Port Disney over in Long Beach. Right. And then finally it appears at DCA. And they finally were able to build it, and no one really cared. But Disney's America was going to have that flight simulator thing, which ended up being Soarin'. And that Disney America DCA thing is kind of hot topic sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, if you have a good idea, I'd hope you'd hang on to it and find a way to make it work.
I know what I'm looking forward to next week is I figure that we'll see lots of footage from Cinderella's castle suite, because I figure with the media events, they'll probably open the doors up to that location. So I figure your nightly news or whatever, your local stations might feature some B-roll of the castle suite. And I believe that that's going to be the time when the first family finally gets to stay in
the Bushes are coming?
Okay, no. The first family to win the castle suite dream. We'll get to experience that. So it'll be fun to finally see something beyond the stills and the concept art.
Also, I think with the Nemo slant that it sort of had to take on, because I know they're going to preview La Flor, but that's not ready to open. You probably should expect to see something really focused in on Disney's relationship with the animals. Dr. Beth might do another presentation. American Zoological Aquarium Association, wherever they changed their name, it's now the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. But you might see something like that.
Oh, that'd be fun. That's great. Wow. They did that with Everest. They really focused on the Disney message of conservation, because they accomplish a lot. I'm always amazed at how much Disney does regarding the conservation and environmentality.
And as into this company as we are, I mean, it is our life, basically. It's certainly not the foremost in our minds. They don't go shouting from the rooftops the good they do.
Right.
But it's done, and it's to be applauded.
And what I think is neat is, because we still respect animals so much, Animal Kingdom hasn't lost its vision, whereas, you know, Disney MGM Studios is not really a working motion picture studio anymore. And, you could go into the Epcot and Doobie already mentioned DCA sort of losing its spirit. But Animal Kingdom is still about animals. And the minute they lose that is when that park loses its identity. And I think because we're so concerned about them, the folks at Disney will always have something special of Animal Kingdom.
Then it'll just be Kingdom. Not quite as catchy.
Disney's Kingdom.
Disney's Kingdom.
Trademark Kingdom, after all.
But apparently it can Epcot.
Center, 82.
Epcot, 94.
It wasn't 82. Oh, it opened in 82.
Yes, thank you.
Epcot, 94.
Stupid again. And with that bit of stupidity, we will close this podcast. Any parting shots from any other panel? Nope.
Make your reservations for New Orleans. We hope to see you there.
We do hope to see you there. We have tentative plans to get down to New Orleans for the shareholders meeting. If you've never been to one, it is worth going to at least one time.
State of the Walt Disney Company is strong.
I only have been to one, and it was the one with Roy Disney, so they don't always have that many fireworks. But it's interesting to see the presentations from the head honchos themselves and hear what they think is important going forward and what they think is important to show to the people that pay their salary. It gives you some insight to the company you don't otherwise get. If you have the opportunity to go, all you need to own is one share. You can take a guest. Go. And with that, we'll close this edition of the Laughing Place podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think. You can email us at podcast@laughingplace.com. That's podcast@laughingplace.com. You can also reach us on the discussion boards. There's a section just for the podcast where you can post any of the other sections. And you can also leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you, again, on your 2007 predictions or your opinion of anything we talked about this week or anything you'd like to hear in the future. You can reach us at toll-free. We will pay the bill for the phone call, 866-718-9408. That's 866-718-9408. We hope to hear from you one of those ways, and we hope you'll hear from us next week.